8 o'clock hour here on DFW Sports Station, your home of the Cowboys and Rangers. Sean Sharif, RJ Choppy, and our insider Bobby Roberto Belt with Cowboys Rams tomorrow with a preseason opener. Are you on that pregame or postgame coverage?
I am. I'll be on there right when first segment, I think, of pregame action tomorrow at 3:30.
How are we looking at the starters playing? I think Dak Prescott said yesterday he's not expecting action, but he'd be down for it.
So far, I think the expectation is you're not. It's like what Tommy Yarsh talked about yesterday. Some of the starters who maybe you feel like haven't gotten enough work in practice, you might give them some extra work, but general approach has been to reserve them. Shoddy hasn't totally tipped as to what he wants to do yet, but that would be my guess, is that we're going to see a lot of reserve action where the bodies make sense. Like in some instances, you may have somebody on defense, a defensive tackle. It's like, yeah, that guy might start and he's playing because of just where their depth is at. But I would expect a lot of reserves tomorrow night.
I wanted, and I'm usually don't put them on the field, don't risk it with the preseason. I've changed my mind for this preseason. Now I wonder, are there injuries or just too many questions up front not to risk it with Dak?
Dak specifically, I understand why they would say your injury history the last few years has said we don't want to expose you any more than we have to. So I get why they would want to limit some of that. They've limited him in practices this year more than they have in years past. And so I would assume that, yeah, they're not trying to expose him any more than they have to, especially with the aging concerns and injury risk.
I understand every team's that doesn't play their starters.
Yeah.
I understand the thought process. But, you know, we went 100 years in this league without that thought process. And, you know, how many catastrophic preseason injuries are there? You know, there wasn't all that many from a quarterback perspective.
What does Rashawn Slater do to this whole discussion and Micah as well? Rashawn Slater, brand new deal, highest tackle contract in NFL history, 4 for 113. He's gone, season-ending ruptured patella.
Yeah, this is, I mean, you're talking about a guy who just reset the offensive line market, got the biggest deal, and 11 days later, he's gone for the year. And I think this doesn't necessarily play directly into it, but this is the risk that I think, when I said I didn't think that Jerry was taking direct shots necessarily at people in that press conference, I really do think he was talking more just from that perspective of these guys get hurt. Like, and somebody like Slater getting hurt probably just hasn't gone, see, 11 days later, you make this massive investment. Now you don't even have him for the whole year. And you have no idea how he's going to bounce back from that injury. And it's a similar thing with, like, you know, Steele got hurt and had trouble bouncing back from the injury. They signed Gallup. Gallup had trouble coming back from his injury. And so I think it's just immediately after you sign Dak, you've got injury issues. I think it's just an instance of Jerry has seen it happen with his investments, or he's more keenly aware of the injury bug that has hit his investments, that I just think he naturally starts paying more attention to, okay, well, what if? What if he gets hurt?
Joe Milton sounds like he's going to be okay to play.
Milton sounds like he's going to be fine. He's got the thumb.
He doesn't get hurt.
Well, I mean, he did hurt his thumb.
No. That hurt for Joe Milton and hurt for us is two different things.
Do you think it's like Achilles, where he was dipped in the gold God covering, but held by his, you think he was held by his thumbs and dipped in? And
just no, I think he was held by his ability to read a defense.
There you go. That's what it is.
But this is a lesson. Go ahead, Bobby.
No, Milton, I think we'll see a ton of tomorrow night.
This is a lesson that we should all remember in how bad, and we already know the internet is bad and not trustworthy, but how these different outlets just run with something. I just typed in Joe Milton in Twitter. He's been putting on an absolute clinic against the Cowboys defense from one account. He's been one of the best. Cowboys have one of the best QB rooms in the NFL from Dove. Another account, been playing like a bona fide superstar throughout camp. I got 5 or 6 different accounts talking about him dominating in Oxnard, and it just makes me wonder when we see a Bro Bible headline, when we see a Barstool headline, of people just taking it and running with it with no accuracy, pun intended.
There was a baseball player years ago. His name was Ryan Thompson. I don't even remember Ryan Thompson.
No.
That generic name? No.
But he was the guy that he would put on a show in batting practice. He was like unbelievable. in the cages. Everything is barreled up. Batting practice, everything, right? It was that you put him on the field and he hits 220. Now, back then, 220 was like awful. Now it's like league average, right? But he was, that was him. And that's Joe. You put Joe Milton against on one-on-ones, which he's just throwing the receiver, where he's not having to read a defense and take a snap and have people in front of him. I mean, he looks the part. And then you put people in front of him and a defense to read and have to be on time. Different game.
Yeah, I mean, that's honestly what it, I mean, honestly, even those practice situations, sometimes it's not comfortable. Sometimes it'll still sail on him. Like, he's got tremendous ability. That's the thing. You just hope you can harness it and turn him into somebody who can, like, the traits are all there. It's just a matter of, like, all right, how do we rein this in and make sure that he's got this skill set used to its best, the best of its ability.
RJ Choppy's checklist for tomorrow. Cowboys, Rams, preseason game one on the Fan.
All right, number one, the five things I want to see for the Cowboys in their preseason game. I want to see Joe Milton end the Cowboys' career of Will Greer.
Okay.
All right. Nothing against Will, other than he chose to go to Florida to start his college career. But Joe playing great is better for the Dallas Cowboys, because Joe playing great is because he's got more upside. And with the upside there, if Dak gets hurt, I mean, I think you got a legitimate chance to stay competitive. Number two, some clarity on the wide receiver room. Outside your top guys, your Mingos, your Tolberts, your Holdens, like, who shines, right? Is there, can you get some kind of a clear view, clear eye view, Jalen, of who the number three or four might be? Can you get some of that? Number three, do we have a running back that can break one? Like, any running back will do, literally.
And Jaden Blue, his status after yesterday?
The thought is that it's nothing serious with Blue, and it remains to be seen how much they want to push him, but it's thought that he's going to be fine.
Number four, how does a shoddy coach team look? Does he wear the visor forward? Is he backwards?
It's going to be forward.
Baseball hat? Does he go to the baseball? Does he go to Tuca? What's he wearing out there? You know. And then number five, most importantly, this is a meaningless game, and if you're watching the fourth quarter, you need your head examined, but I want no injuries. That's number four. Five, whatever.
That's been a challenge. That has been I mean, the injury issue has been such a problem for them, just at these practices. So much more than I can remember it ever being. Usually you will have there'll be a big injury we're talking about during training camp, usually. Some are bigger than others, but yeah, a Sam Williams pops up, a Tyron Smith has the avulsion fracture while he's in training camp. I can't remember every day it feeling like three people left the field, and it's been like that like the entire camp, and I really think they got to do some sort of audit of themselves and just look and go, like, what is different this year? We can't just assume this is bad luck.
How surprised were you to see Steven and Diggs just laughing and hugging it up yesterday?
Very surprised. That's not been cheery. It does make me wonder, all right, is Steven the role of good cop right now? But I mean, because obviously in the opening press conference, Jerry was the one who was more forward with his criticism. But Steven hasn't pulled back necessarily. Steven's talked about, we think he's behind and he should have been here and those sort of things. But I mean, I think so many of these guys really do look at it and contextualize it as it's business. And it's just the nature of the business, and I guess that's just part of them and their interactions.
Let's go around the rest of the National Football League. We got Bloody Vrabel, Smelling Salts, and Shedeur Sanders starting.
Yeah, let's see. Are the Browns doing Shedeur dirty here? They are going to start him.
Yeah.
They have given him exactly zero reps with the ones.
Now, and you think that's putting him in an unfair position?
Perhaps. That's the talk is. They're putting him in an unfair position. Now, the question I have, and this is why I don't think it's necessarily as big of a deal as people are trying to make it out to be, is that how many of the ones are actually going to play?
Yeah, it's not. I mean, even if the ones play, why is it, wouldn't people want him to get the work in then? Like, I don't understand.
If you haven't gotten any, like, if you haven't gotten any practice reps, quarterbacks will tell you that they throw to the guys who get open in practice. That's who they throw to in games.
Yeah.
And if you don't play, if you don't practice with any of the guys you're going to be playing with in the game, how do you know who gets open in practice?
I mean, did anybody care in years past when Will Greer was the three, wasn't getting any practice reps with the one, and then in the final preseason game he was playing with the ones? It was just like, yeah, like, I don't think it's setting him up to fail. It's just the nature of where they're at with the reps.
Internet thought, like, oh my God, you're trying to make him look bad.
Right.
Like, what is Cleveland doing by bringing in Tyler Huntley as well? Like, what are they doing?
They have such a huge quarterback room. They got injuries, but they just made the quarterback room bigger. Doesn't make any whole lot of sense.
Yeah, what is it? It's like the
Huntley, Pickett, Flacco, Gabriel, Shador.
That is feels like the definition of if you have five quarterbacks, you have
you don't
nine.
Have any.
Like, I guess they're just looking at it as we got to find some quarterback, so we're going to literally throw anybody we can into this competition because we're so bad at picking the one that we're just going to pick five of them and see who's right. best.
So, I mean, I don't think it's as big of a deal as being made out to be because
I hope he balls out. This is going to be the story tomorrow morning when you wake up and watch highlights. It's going to be Shador's start.
For sure. Absolutely. Smelling salts. So there's been confusion around this because a couple of days ago, it was like the NFL's banning smelling salts.
By the way, has anyone ever done them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's...
Calm down.
At the gym. The guys break them out at the gym all the time.
Really?
All the time.
What does it smell like?
Like ammonia.
Yeah, it's ammonia.
Wow. And you watch them do it?
I've watched them do it.
And
I've,
what are they doing it for? Before a lift?
Yeah. Like themselves geeked up.
Wow.
Yeah, it basically kicks in fight or flight or something. Like, it just basically alertness and... But I mean, KNC did it in here,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, you can smell it across
KNC,
the room.
KNC, before they even opened the bottle, they could smell it. And then when they opened it, they held it like... I mean, they held it 2 feet away from themselves and just kind of took a light sniff, and they immediately just recoiled and closed their eyes.
Awful. So anyway, George Kittle was like, dude, I'm going to retire. So I was about to take the under on San Fran and George Kittle. All of his unders I was taking because he said he would do it before every series.
Every series?
Every series.
What are the medical ramifications on this? Is it like whippets?
It
can't be great.
I don't know. It can't be great for you. I mean, you're inhaling. But here, the NFL is like, no. Hang on. We got so much pushback on this. We're going to allow it, but we're not going to supply it anymore. You got to bring your own stash.
I couldn't believe this.
I couldn't believe this either. And I'm thinking to myself,
we're not going to give it to you, but you can bring it?
Yeah. What? Bring your own? Like, am I the only one who thinks that, like, I don't know, you could... have players getting popped for lacing these things with something? Like, could you lace a, I have no idea. Could you lace a smelling salt with a PED that's airborne?
No.
Some Balco guy's going to figure this one out.
I don't think so. I don't think you can hold something away from your nose and sniff a PED. But,
you know, something nefarious is going to happen.
I'm guessing here. They just look at it as it's something you can have. We're not going to outright ban it. But, like, we're not going to take on the... liability or potential insurance liability of, oh, somebody had an awful adverse reactions because we supplied it on the sideline.
So it's like, bring the amount of Percocets you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Percocet.
And Vrabel, Percocet. Making you roll your eyes.
Yeah. Vrabel, this is peak football guy. So he got mixed up in it. He got bloodied and bruised after jumping into a practice scrum the other day for the Patriots. He went in there, broke it up. This is old school football guy. Chop, you should love this. This is big Dan Campbell energy. To jump into the dog pile, break it up, mix it up, get in the fight. Drake May was like, yeah, that's just how much he cares. He's in there. He's fighting with us, and he just shows how intense he is. But it does make me roll my eyes. It's like, Vrabel seems like the guy who was like, he was waiting for the first scrum. So he could be like, all right, let me get in there and show my, I'm one of you guys too, and I'm the alpha here, and I'm going to break it up. Like, I bet he got in there and it was like,
he went in and
scratched
it up.
I think he scratched his own cheek or something. He's like, all right, let me look bloody. Like somebody do this.
He's like a wrestler, like pulling the blade out of his pants.
Yeah, he's like, he's just faking the look, and then he's coming out and going like, oh my gosh, look at me. But this doesn't feel to me like an adult's in charge. This feels like one of your bros is in charge.
Yeah, right now I'm not feeling great about my Vrabel Cowboy endorsement that he definitely should have been here.
I mean, you feel good when they win the AFC East.
And I had someone try to tell me over under 8.5. I'm like, you tell me, wait, the Patriots have the same over under as the Cowboys? That cannot be right. Is there some Patriot hype? I know you had mentioned
there's a little bit. Yeah, they've gone on a little bit of a spending spree. They've made some, like, they've spent some capital. They've got guys who Drake May's second year. They think Vrabel's going to be a good culture guy.
The quiet Cowboys controversy that no one is talking about. That's next on Sean and RJ 105.3 The Fan. Rangers, Phillies tonight here on your home of the Rangers. Then we got Cowboys, Rams coverage tomorrow. We are your official home, in case you did not know, of your baseball and your football team. DFW Sports Station, it's Sean Sharif, RJ Choppy, and our Cowboys insider Bobby Belt with Peyton and Aiden in the back, live on the FanCam, Twitch, and YouTube below the belt. Coming up at 8:40, worst take of the week, 9 a.m. and 9:20. Nick Eatman, DallasCowboys.com. What is the Cowboy controversy no one's talking about?
Was that mine?
Yeah, it was.
I don't know that it was. Was it's it?
The cheerleaders.
Oh, the cheerleaders. Oh, okay. I didn't say
nobody. You even wrote out the T's.
I'd write. No,
it's your T's.
I did not say the Cowboys. Hold on. Now I'm going to look it up. Oh, I don't think no. I wrote it like that. I don't think I did. I don't think I did. Because it wasn't even in my email yesterday. But yeah, no, we'll talk about it because it was. It's interesting.
No.
I think this whole thing is fascinating. So
when I said to end the segment, the quiet Cowboy controversy no one is talking about, even if you didn't realize that was your story, You had no interest in like asking in the break, like, what was that? What is the controversy? What are we about to talk about?
No, because I was distracted. I thought I was discussing what we were going to be talking about. I thought that's what I was doing on the phone during the break. So that's what I thought it was going to be about. So I just assumed, but you shouldn't assume, I guess. Yeah, the quiet controversy that nobody's talking about is the Cowboys cheerleading series has revealed a suspension in the group. So
a suspended cheerleader?
Yeah, a suspended cheerleader. So this is, I guess Netflix is trying to get their, they've got the Netflix series, The Cheerleader. You've watched that, haven't you, before? Or Amanda has?
I've seen, Amanda loves it.
So this is typically, when you watch these shows, it's clear just how rigid their standards are for a lot of different things. And they're like, you shouldn't be fraternizing with players. You got to be on top of stuff, doing all these different things. Well, a veteran Dallas Cowboys cheerleader, K. Diana McKenzie, who was promoted to a group leader during the 2024 season, was suspended by the organization following the 2024 season, according to season 2 of America's Sweethearts. McKenzie was accused of bullying in regards to a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader teammate. Candy, who is a 5-year Dallas Cowboys cheerleading veteran, took a mental health break during the year. It was revealed that on a team trip to the Bahamas, she brought a man back to the cheerleader rooms, which was against team rules due to safety reasons. While McKenzie never referenced Candy by name, she allegedly referred to the situation during a live stream and said that she would talk all about it in a future video. She admitted that she was suspended for bullying while never mentioning Candy's name. So this was actually a rule violation, I guess, by one cheerleader. And then the other cheerleader just kind of was gossiping about it on a very, like, I'm going to spill the tea at some point. And that was enough that I guess they felt like, okay, that was the greater offense, was you intimidating her more than her screwing up and coming back to the Bahamas hotel with the other girl.
Yeah, because would she not be allowed to mess with someone?
I think it's just they don't want anybody, like, if it's a team, if it's something that they're going for work for, it's more just like, we don't want anybody on premises who is not here with our traveling team. Like, we don't want anybody in your we're here to work. We're not here to do anything else. And so,
but they don't want somebody spilling the laundry.
The bigger issue to them is like the intimidation factor of the other cheerleader, who at that point was kind of bullying and I guess threatening and making it feel that way. But they've cleaned up the situation. I guess she got her suspension and she's no longer out there. But
I've always said, make Kelly Finglass the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys and they'd be winning Super Bowls. She's scary. She don't play. Dude. I love watching her discipline. I like to see the cattiness. I like to see like the pressure that they're, you know, dealing with. And then I'm like, they're always just so perfect with this image. You know, I'm like, let's see how perfect that they really are.
The women of the Dallas Cowboys, like that are around the organization that have different roles or whatever. They don't take S a lot. Like they are
drill sergeant.
I'll gladly walk up to, you know, like Tad and I'll be like, Tad, I said something stupid on the air today. I'm sorry. And, you know, Tad will be upset about it. But I also know like, I'm sorry, man. He's going to be like, all right, okay. There are others. Like there are some of the ladies that I would not walk up. I'd go, hey, I screwed up. Please don't get me thrown out of here.
Choppy, let's clean up the rest of the junk drawer.
How about this one? Now I do. Are you guys ketchup people?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, in certain contexts.
All right. Well, perfect for you then.
Are you not?
I like ketchup, but I use it only on fries and burgers.
Okay.
I don't put it on anything else. Yeah. I couldn't tell you the last time I put it on anything else. Heinz and Smoothie King have teamed up for a tomato ketchup smoothie, and I couldn't think of anything I would want less.
Cream base, you wouldn't want more. You wouldn't want less mayo, something.
This or the breast milk, the fake breast milk ice cream, which is not real. Which one would you eat sooner?
Ooh,
I'd probably eat this first.
No, because
the breast milk ice cream isn't really breast milk. It's just it's an imitation.
I'll take a little sip.
It came from some nipple.
Were you thinking?
No, it didn't.
Were you thinking of the breast milk last night while making that ice cream?
I was not thinking of the breast milk because you know me. I mean, once it's passed, I forget about it. On to the next day. We're on to Cincinnati.
Yeah.
You know, we're on to Cincinnati.
They're trying to replicate the what they say the taste is. So there's not actually breast milk used in it.
Okay. But I could probably get down with that then.
So that's easier than this tomato shake.
This just doesn't sound appealing at all. Does it sound to you guys?
Tomatoes are one of the
like V8? I don't love V8. It's just got to be a Bloody Mary. It's got to be the right Bloody Mary. Hey,
have you had a Clamato? Clamato?
Yeah, I don't. The clam.
Have antibiotics
tomato.
For that.
Yeah, any type of like vegetable drink I was never into. Bloody Marys, I don't think I've ever had one just because it doesn't please me at all.
What about shrimp cocktail in the red sauce? Like, not just shrimp, but the shrimp cocktail in red tomato sauce.
See, I love that. I love that. But then it's just, I don't know, the idea of smoothie and ketchup, it doesn't go well with me.
I'm such a...
That's gross.
I'm such a just... Rube that when I was on the plane last year and the Cowboys had like these little like shrimp cocktails, I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'll try shrimp. And I was like, oh, there's marinara sauce here. And I thought it was just marinara.
Marinara.
That's what I thought it was. I was like, this will cover over some of the taste. It was not marinara, guys.
Well, you were pretty good with the cocktail sauce at St. Elmo's.
Yeah, it didn't burn. It just tasted bad. It was gross. That's what it was.
All right. Do you want a Texas Hunter or HBO Max?
HBO Max.
HBO Max is going the way of Netflix. They are going that way.
Your explanation for this last night, that was my favorite part of your email with at the, not explanation, your chopification. It was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. So HBO Max, which I have HBO Max. Well, and I share the password with my children.
But not Netflix.
No, they have Netflix. They have Netflix. And Netflix doesn't allow password sharing. Although they signed in on the TV and I guess they haven't signed back in at their house. So I still have it. We were watching the Lacey Peterson documentary.
Ooh.
Sarah had never heard of this case before. She never heard of the case. So we 24 watched
years old, yeah.
Yeah. Now, so HBO Max, they are going to start the process of a ban of password sharing. And listen, I share this with my kids, and I just don't understand.
Listen to this.
How you can discriminate against split household. All right? Those are my kids. They should not be punished because I got divorced. So they should not be have to lose their ability to watch whatever.
What if Euphoria. What if you threw that in a custody battle with a lawyer?
With a lawyer.
Who gets to share passwords?
It's kind of a joke. It is actually a good point, though. Like, if you've got kids that... It is really hard. Like, I think if you pitch it as like, look, these kids live in two households and it's one of their accounts and they're just in different spots. Like, you're going to tell that kid like, oh, sorry, you're not allowed to have that.
Yeah. I have a big problem with that. I've got a big problem with Netflix doing that. All right. And I'm going to start a campaign here. Okay. It's me and the other divorcees, whatever we're called. You know, we should be able to share things with our children.
It really does make sense that they don't just allow you to get it for free.
I get it. But yeah, I would say... Maybe like two networks. Like there should be a cap on it maybe. Like, okay, you can have it in two households. Because a lot of people do float back and forth between different places. So that's the way I look at it. You know, we've had this discussion before, I think. You've said you don't think you're going to be able to get your kids to play youth sports, right? That Amanda,
no.
Amanda has said he's not out there practicing football. That's not happening.
Yeah, football's not happening.
So, and that's you want...
Well, now that the smelling salts are back, maybe.
Yeah, there you go. You want him to have that. I feel like youth sports has been under a little bit of... attack nationally at times for just like safety risks, and you know, it creates a culture of just toxic masculinity and they bully the kids. There's a new research out from the University of Washington that's gonna run counter to all that, and it's actually kind of makes sense when you think about it, I think. So they found in research that sports participation in kids greatly reduces the risk of suicide in teenagers. That they said they found out that when teenagers participate in team sports, that it is an active intervention strategy for kids because they've got their purpose or whatever that they're doing in terms of with the team sport. They usually feel unity, camaraderie. Mm. It helps create accountability with other people. They feel like there are people that care for them. And so they said in their research, they show that it has greatly reduced the risk of suicide in teenagers whenever they participate in team sports.
Amen. I think so much of that is, A, you have, like you said, sports is, you have friends, you have built-in friends. How much of teen suicide is you're lonely, you feel like you have no worth, whatever.
COVID,
absolutely. But also, like, it's team sports in general, doesn't matter if it's team or not, they teach you about, like, it's okay to fail. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to fail. Like, you're going to lose. And how much of that is, like, you can't deal with losing or with being, you know, unsuccessful for a moment. Whereas, like, if you play baseball, especially because you're game of failure, you're used to failing 70% of the time.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, is that isolation is such a big driver. If you have thoughts that are you know, just very negative, or you're dealing with sort of, the worst place for you to be is in isolation alone with that. And that makes sense to me then, that, like, you know, it's a natural connection. If you're there, if you're part of that group, you're naturally going to mm-hmm. be guarded against some of that.
877-881-1053 to hit us up on the Frank LaFranco Injury Attorney text line here on your home of the Rangers and Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan. Bobby is going to tell you why everyone in North Texas hates the nosebleeds. Is the G-bag fight back on? That's next. And below the belt on Sean and RJ. The great Bobby Belt.
Bobby Belt is an idiot.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not.
Over to you, Bobby.
The nosebleeds suck, and everybody in Dallas knows it.
Dang.
It's unanimous. It, like, we have factual data that proves the nosebleeds suck. And by the nosebleeds,
open up your damn ears and listen.
I'm talking about the nosebleed seats at AT&T Stadium is what I meant. This is a report over. In fact, there's a couple different things that tie in here. As we talk in Below the Belt, which is sponsored by D&M Leasing, check them out at dmautoleasing.com. Let's start first with the report from Sportico that came out this week about NFL ticket revenue. So one of the things fans always, I feel like, just hate these days is whenever they see a Forbes report talking about how valuable the Cowboys are, or look at all the money the Cowboys made. It just triggers them. Well, you may take some solace knowing that the Dallas Cowboys were not the highest selling football team in the National Football League last year, and it was by a long shot. So the Cowboys in ticket revenue last year were second in the NFL, but they were behind the San Francisco 49ers. Now, what would you generally think? Gate revenue, they had 9 home games last year. What would you generally think, like, Cowboys probably pulled in X amount of dollars at the gate?
I wouldn't even know where to start.
Again, what's the average ticket price? Do you think?
And Cuba says they lose, right? All pro sports teams lose on that.
I would. Is the average ticket price $500? Is that too high?
I don't know. What do you think?
If it's $500 times 100,000, Peyton, what is that?
That's 50 million.
Is it 50 million? So they made times 9. They made that.
Oh, okay.
Whatever 50 million times
450.
Nine is.
Huh? 450.
450.
Yeah, you are about 4 times too high, the ticket revenue that the Cowboys made last year. $136 million. They averaged about $15 million a game, which is not, like, nothing. I don't want to make it sound like it's nothing, but I would have bet anything that they were pulling it. They got to be north of $25 million for how expensive some of those seats get. Now, a lot of that's going to be resale market and different things like that. But here's what surprises me. They're $136 million. First place ahead of them. The 49ers in, I think, one fewer home games last year. They made $40 million more last season in ticket revenue than the Cowboys did.
What?
$176 million at Levi's Stadium.
California prices.
Now, that ties into the next day, and it was not a direct tie, and it just happened to be this way. Bookies.com put out a breakdown of, hey, this used to be an accessible thing. The NFL, it was accessible to every fan that wanted to follow their team because it was on broadcast TV, everything else. But they're like, all right, where are the cheapest nosebleed seats? And where? How far away are they? How good are the nosebleed seats in every stadium? And the number one worst nosebleed seat in the NFL belongs to the Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys at AT&T Stadium.
Wow.
They measured this by where is the last seat in the stadium. How far away is that in terms of feet from the field?
What's your point?
And the number one in the league is the Dallas Cowboys. 552 feet and 4 inches in section 431, row 22, seat 1.
You're almost 2 football fields away.
Yeah.
And you're looking into the sun probably too.
And number 2 on this list is the San Francisco 49ers at Levi's Stadium, 539 feet away.
So how much per game was it that they made?
Dallas?
Yeah.
About $15
million. $15 million
in gate revenue. So about $150 bucks a ticket, essentially, is the average.
People are busting on the Cowboys even more because the Bills apparently have their new stadium block the wind. And people are like, oh, you can
You can set your stadium up to do certain things.
Yeah.
Based upon the elements and God.
Right. They set their stadium up to block the wind, but not the snow, so they can't have a Super Bowl.
That's the biggest thing they're worried about is just Buffalo can't have the Super Bowl. Nobody wants to go there.
No, but nobody wanted to go to Minneapolis either, but they got one.
But Minneapolis is like a city with infrastructure. Buffalo is
We were in a mall. We were in a mall.
Have you been to Buffalo?
No, but I've seen it.
Have
on
you?
TV.
As a kid. I don't remember it.
But I mean, like, I know that they're
It's by the size of Jacksonville.
Buffalo
right?
is
small.
Oh gosh. Ugh. I mean, at least their ponds are frozen over. I don't have to smell all that.
Maybe smaller.
No, the Cowboys, I've actually talked to people on the Cowboys, DallasCowboys.com side and different stuff like that.
Well,
they will all tell you Buffalo is the worst ride into the stadium in the NFL. They're like, they are worse than Philly fans. They are worse than Giants. They are nasty to you going into the stadium. And it's like, they're bad. And it's tight quarters. Yeah. And it's just, it's like a little community football team. Now, the best value, oddly enough, seems to be at these stadiums that don't have a lot of like intense home field advantages, and you would think it'd be better than that. The closest nosebleed seat you can get is 414 feet away at Hard Rock Stadium with the Dolphins, which Dolphins have always been considered to kind of have just a like generic one. Chargers and Rams at SoFi are 418, and then behind that is the Cardinals, which those are significantly closer, and you would think, all right, tighter atmosphere, that would be a louder environment, something like that. But no, those are both areas where those are considered kind of generic fans, I think.
We got to play the beginning of Mike McDaniel's press conference the other day.
You should stand corrected. Good morning. False. Great morning. Let's go.
What makes this one great?
Because we're another day closer to death.
I mean, that's par for the course with him.
It's a great morning because we're another day closer to death.
Is that par for the course for Iowa?
Yeah,
thought?
He just
like
seems
optimistic.
Like he's weird. He's weird. That's what
False.
It is.
Great morning. Let's go.
I can't get over how much he sounds like the Hardley boys from South Park. I got a clue. Like, that's the way he talks. But I've always thought of him as being optimistic, positive players coach that everybody can. I've never thought of him as being Joe Mazzulla. That sounds like Mazzulla. Like, Mazzulla would be like, we're closer to death. Which
because
means
we're another day closer to death.
We're closer to reaching our ultimate goal of what we need to be, which is jumping off of this earth.
What is the philosophy on that? What's the life philosophy? What am I missing?
Well, we're closer to death. I would assume there'd be some kind of spiritual.
Oh.
We're closer to heaven.
Going to heaven.
Right.
Okay.
What's his religion, though? I don't know I don't know if he is religious. That's the thing. And so if he was, then that would make some
Ask
sense.
Ask him next time you're hanging with him in Indy
last year. When he's swinging his legs from that. That is still the funniest thing I've ever seen. He was sitting in this like high, taller than that chair you're sitting in right there. And he's got his arms folded, and he is swinging both legs from this chair because he can't reach the bottom of it. It cracked me up. I thought it was funny. All right, the Dallas Cowboys were back on the practice field yesterday and dealt with a few different injuries that were obviously of significant concern because of the players that were tied to it. Jake Ferguson was the first one. He left, walked off the practice field, didn't even go to the medical tent. He apparently is going to be just fine. No issues there. The one that was really concerned, I think Chop texted about it first yesterday, was that Jaden Blue had left on a cart, and that was concerning to everybody. It's like, all right, you got to hop on a cart. There's a big issue here.
Yeah.
He went in the medical tent. He came back out, seemed fine. I mean, if you're coming back out and standing on the sideline, generally there's not a big problem with it. Nick Harris from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram reported last night that Jaden Blue's MRI revealed a bone bruise in his heel after it was stepped on in today's practice. No ankle sprain. Good news for the young back who has emerged as an offensive playmaker in camp. That's one spot where I don't think you want to set anybody back right now is everything that they're doing in the running game, because you've already got the issues with, you know, Tyler Guyton has fallen out. You've had the issues with Terrence Steele missing some time. You're already trying to put new run game concepts in, and you're trying to break in a whole new running back group. Stephen Jones had talked on the what podcast, RJ Choppy?
Doomsday Pod. Yes, Doomsday.
With Matt Mosley. And Ed Werder, former college associate of Mike Fisher. I think they went to the same college at the same
gentlemen,
time, roughly.
I was much younger than Eddie. I enrolled at 15 years old.
he had a lot. He reacted to a couple different things with Micah
Fish yesterday when he was covering my Micah Jerry report. I saw like this breaking YouTube and I turned on. He goes, after my visit with Sean Sharif, you know what our visit was? Mike texted me and said, nice scoop. And I wrote back the thumbs up emoji. And he goes, after my visit with him, like we had this long in-depth conversation to verify. Like, Michael.
It's technically true.
Michael.
He visited with you.
I don't think that's a technical visit.
But that is what he would say. Oh, Jerry Jones told me. He listened on our show. He listened to Jerry's answer on our show. Jerry Jones tells me that
Stephen.
After my visit, I said, "Am I drunk? Like, did I talk to Mike on the phone today?"
Stephen reacted with Doomsday to a couple different things with Mike. It was the general Stephen sort of reaction. We're not going to get into details, you know, sort of generic. I thought his answer about George Pickens was interesting because we've been asking this question with the Mike negotiations going on. How might that impact George Pickens' negotiations since they share an agent? Could things get ugly there? Would you start seeing them cool at all on Pickens because of their issues potentially with Micah Parsons or their tension with Micah Parsons? I thought this was a very direct response by Stephen Jones as to what their impressions of George Pickens have been.
Certainly, he's been better than advertised. Everybody, all you have to do is go out here and watch practice and see the skill set that he has. But the other thing is how he conducts his business, how the chemistry with him and CD and Dak and the rest of the offense have really come together. He's all about team, and he wants to win a championship, and obviously he's in the last year of his contract, so he's motivated, not unlike most,
to perform and
for his business as well.
That's, I think, fascinating on a couple different, because you're talking about, we routinely talk about how the Cowboys seem to, they're like looking at a used car when they get into contract negotiations. Well, there's a dent there. When was the last time the timing belt was changed? Ooh, that could go at any second. I'm going to have to knock off some of the price of that because I'm going to have to pay to get that fixed. That's their approach generally. You've got Pickens heading into a year where there's already so much attention on him and so much buzz and discussion about what his reputation actually is. I think it's fascinating that Stephen Jones would stop down and go, by the way this guy handles himself, what a pro. Like, super, like, admirable the way he is as a professional, and oh my gosh, he just wants to win, and he's better even as a football player than we thought he was. You don't usually see them just fawning over somebody that they're going to enter contract negotiations with soon, which I wonder if that is just
with
David Mulugeta, who is representing Mike Parsons, which maybe that is an unconscious or very much conscious approach from Stephen to say, hey, we're shown here, this is not personal outside of just separate. These are separate things for us.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think is encouraging. The left tackle situation, again, is another one. Nate Thomas has been out there filling in. He's done a good job in the practices that I've seen, stepping in for Tyler Guyton. This was Stephen Jones on the current left tackle situation as they prepare for week one.
Well, let's start with left tackle. I think certainly we lost. That was a gut shot when we thought we had lost him for the year, and we did. I mean, the initial prognosis was probably a torn ACL, which would mean the end of the year. And I will say we were scrambling, thinking, hey, we're going to have to do something. And so when we found out that he's got a hell of a chance to, be back for the first game, if not the second, the way he's coming along, we feel like he's got a hell of a shot for the first game. But he was having one hell of a camp. And so, we actually feel pretty good about that. And then on top of the fact, that Nate Thomas comes in here and has really done well. We were really interested to see how he did against, a different group that you're not seeing every day. And he really stepped up, had a nice day. Someone mentioned in the offensive room, they go, how did Nate Thomas do? Well, we didn't mention him. So when you're the left tackle and no one's saying what the hell's going on over there, that's a good thing.
Boy, I guess right now Stephen is so worn out by contract questions that if you ask him anything else, he's going to give you some good stuff.
Yes,
because
so excited.
I thought him saying right there, he sounds genuinely optimistic Guyton might be back week one, which would be a little bit of an accelerated timeline. But that also confirms what you had asked the question of at the time about with Rappaport. Was Rappaport wrong? Was he given bad info? Stephen just said there, yeah, we initially thought the prognosis was he's out for the year. And so that was where it was at. But interesting stuff from Stephen Jones on Doomsday.
Doomsday.
That was one interesting. I said fascinating all the other times.
Oh, yeah, it was a lot of
I was very conscious of saying fascinating instead of interesting. Take your bell back.
Below the belt right here. 105.3 The Fan. Final hour of the show. Nick Eatman with his Rams preview from Oxnard at 9:20. But worst take. Who had the worst take in the world this week at 877-881-1053? Was it RJ's college team? Was it Jim Acosta?
And why am I being put up for nomination? Mm-hmm. Worst take after this.